Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Hey,
tornado,
Sunny
Pentacap. And we got a big, action-packed, wild show for you tonight. Lots of big news. Big events, two UFC events this Saturday. Unbelievable cards. We had, wow, what an upset last week. Even Tom's crystal ball didn't get this one right in the UFC fight, main event. But we'll talk about that later. I didn't get a chance to watch this week's Ultimate Fighter, the full episode, but I did watch right up until the fight, but it looks like there's 20 minutes left in the show with the fight coming up, so it's obviously going to be the three-rounder, so excited to see that later, but Tom can spoil it for me if he wants. We got Glenn Johnson on the show. Can't forget to mention that. Tony's going to have to ask a lot of questions tonight. You know why? Hello, Tony.
Yeah, I'm right here.
You know why why are you going to have to ask a lot of questions tonight?
Well, yeah, because I want to talk to Glenn and touch to you about the fight last week, the Adonis Stevenson fight, which I didn't get to see. I wasn't home last weekend, but I heard a lot about it, and I heard, you know, this boy gave Adonis a hell of a fight. I mean, people were thinking it was going to be a whitewash, and it wasn't. And I was hoping they'd probably see the fight live, but he really took a lot of shots. Pretty impressive, you know, as Stevenson heard, that Stevenson wasn't even in the first three rounds. So he might have been pretty much out on the seat at the end of that fight. And now, you know, I want to ask Glenn, did he see it? And second of all, was he, you know, looking his chops up and saying, I wish I was in there with Stevenson, because there'd be a new light heavyweight champ.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but I did watch the UFC card Saturday night. So you're going to have to kind of give us a rundown of all the boxing stuff. I got reports, but I didn't see any of it. So, did you get to watch the fight?
No, I was away on Saturday.
Oh.
And then I didn't get a chance to see that.
Oh,
so much,
it's Glenn.
You know,
Glenn can give us the blow-by-blow.
Yeah, right. That I've been so busy that I haven't even downloaded.
Psychic Tom's with us.
Yes, sir. How about, I guess Saturday night was the night of a major upset.
The
old cliche?
Yeah, we're changing your nickname to the Tax Man.
Well, you know, I didn't go back and hear my prediction, but I mean, I'm pretty sure I didn't, I'm speechless.
You're supposed to say, hey, I meant to pick T.J. Dillashaw. I meant to say bet on T.J. for the upset.
Yeah, well, you know what these guys say in the stock market. You know, they'll have these analysts on CNBC, and the bottom line is they get paid God only knows how much money to help us lose our money if you listen to these guys. I mean, they make money no matter what they say, but the reality is they don't know anything more than anyone else, really, but when they're wrong, they have a beautiful phrase that they skate out of it. It's like, well, I was a little, like if they'll say, well, when you were on here 4 months ago, you recommended company XYZ at $60 a share. Now it's down to 40. And as well, I wasn't wrong. I was just a bit early. See, I was just a bit early. Yeah, so,
of course. It's 2020, as they say, and I probably should have gotten on the TJ bandwagon when I kept seeing these reports of him sparring on the plane. And there's a picture of him going around the baggage claim area on a circular thing, getting the mix. I mean, this kid was literally training right up to the event. And I'll tell you, I talked a lot about defense, and I've been at MMA events like they do at football games. And T.J. Hoffberger showed that the best defense is awesome offense. I could not believe the style that he adopted. I mean, Reed and Burrow, there was a lot of talk about whether it was really questioned that he was deserving of that fight, and he looked like he was locked up there. And T.J. just basically played, I'd like to call his style the Irish step dancing Mexican bullfighter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think after that knockdown in the first round, that changed the whole dynamics, not just physically and technique wise, but psychologically. Varal had that look on his face like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. And the impressive thing was, is TJ, I think, may have had superior wrestling skills, but he didn't rely on them much. He just stood and won the fight on the feet. And it seems like we're seeing a pattern here with these guys that knock these unbeatable guys off their pedestal, like we've seen with Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva, as we're seeing here with TJ. They have that boxing-wrestling combination that the wrestling determines where the fight will be, and the boxing just kicks in. I mean, it's not that they're not studying, they're working under Muay Thai and their jiu-jitsu, but that seems to be the combination. And TJ just had the right mindset and just took it to him and did not stop for five rounds. So
right. I think what he did best was, I mean, he definitely listened to his corner. I remember there was one point where they went back to the corner and said, you got to throw more kicks. Well, he gave him out there three more kicks. See, that's the major key that people miss when I talk about defense. You know, it's not only covering yourself. When you go in for a punch, you don't leave yourself vulnerable. And what he did was he got to the point where he didn't throw a punch until he was almost behind Burrow or to the side of him. Burrow had nowhere to look even to throw a punch back. And I think that's what really won the fight for Dillashaw. And I was just amazed by the way he mixed everything together. I mean, he just always looked like he was on like a 3-mile road run out there, just relaxed wise, you know, fighting wise. He was throwing everything together. He was putting all their best punches together at the right time, and he made so few mistakes. That's what really totally amazed me, that he was able to make so few mistakes through that whole fight.
That's exactly what it took. It was a chess match, and I think he was thinking constantly. And I just can't say enough about him. And he's also going to wear his belt to his wedding. I don't know if you heard that. I guess he's getting married in a few weeks. he's going to wear his belt. A la Tim Sylvia walking around Las Vegas going into restaurants with his belt, from what I heard. Interesting.
He earned it. But he ended up not letting it even go to the judges, which was even more impressive. I mean, he could have easily just went into cruise control in round five, but ended up knocking him out with the head kick and punches at the 226 mark. And Burrow falls to 32-2. TJ goes up to 10-2 and just looks unbeatable with that time. I don't know what to do with that. I mean, you look at guys like him and John Jones and the other champions out there, and one thing that connects them all is they have dynamic striking. Mm-hmm. And the type of striking, like I said, that leaves you very little risk. Like John Jones, he's always throwing oblique kicks. You know, you're not going to break your foot throwing an oblique kick most of the time. You know, he throws a lot of elbows. That's very key. I don't think people throw enough elbows. People should be using elbows, I think, in MMA like boxers on punches. Every chance they get, they should be throwing on the feet, on the ground. It's just such a versatile strike in MMA, and people just don't use it enough. But actually, one of the sad things about last Saturday's card, I talked about good defense in the main event. Well, there was some very bad defense on the undercard. Tony Ferguson versus Katsunori Kukuno. Did you see that fight?
Yes, and I think it demonstrated Okinawan karate's strengths and weaknesses. There was just no, it was so linear with the Japanese fight, just straight ahead, and I'm almost saying, my God, you know, you can give some head movement. And he was just coming straight forward, and it took Ferguson a little while to figure it out, but then when he did, the results were not pretty. So that's my take on it. I mean, I think the guy was just a little too robotic. What do you think?
Yeah, for anyone who didn't see the fight, he basically had his hands down at his stomach, kind of like a low John L. Sullivan bare-knuckle pose.
that's been kind of the mantra, and...
left, right, real quick at different times, just 1-2 punches, not a lot of hooks or kicks or anything like that.
I think what a lot of the problem is some with some of the point style karate tournaments and the one-step sparrings and stuff like that, you're not getting punched back, and you can develop some bad habits. And
the thing about boxing, the difference between boxing and MMA is boxing, you're always told to keep your hands up. And in MMA, especially karate, your hands down when you're kicking a lot.
Yes.
So it gets you out of just keeping your hands up at all times. And I think you should still be able to do that while you kick.
Mm-hmm.
Just get it out of your head. Maybe like a spinning back kick, you don't have to do it, but... Now, when you're straight ahead at somebody and they're coming at you, you always got to have your hands up, even if they're throwing a body kick at them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that my my old Muay Thai coach would get on me about that, and it just made me just really start doing it nice and slow and making sure, because sometimes, like when I first started with some Muay Thai, I would drop my hands a lot, and that can be a very, very, very bad habit, as he found out. So, you know, hopefully he can put things back together and evolve his style a little bit, because if he sticks with that, those bad habits can be very hard to break.
Yeah, very quickly, I'm just going to run through the preliminaries. Chris Holdsworth got a win over Chico Camus there, unanimous decision. Mitch Clark beat Ali Kinta by technical submission in the second round. Vince Pichel got a win over Anthony Njikwani, unanimous decision. Sam Cecilia beat Aaron Phillips by unanimous decision. And Jun Yang Lee beat David Michaud by split decision. We had the Ultimate Fighter winner there from the live season. He beat Francisco Trinaldo by pretty dominant unanimous decision there. It was a good fight. James Krause, speaking of elbows, by the way, Chiesa threw a lot of nice elbows in that fight. James Krause beat Jamie Varner by TKO, ankle injury, actually. This one was very sad.
That was painful.
I hate to see, you know, Joe Rogan, as annoying as he is sometimes when he points something out and he's right, and he repeats it so many times, he had this immediately. When Varner hurt himself, he knew he hurt himself. And if a guy at ringside's looking through the cage can see that, I don't know why the ref doesn't step in and notice that and do something before the guy just basically walks on a broken ankle and fights on a broken ankle through the whole freaking half of the first round, at least. I don't know. I don't know what these guys are looking at, but I would have stopped the fight if I was the referee and noticed that. That take a look at this. He probably injured it worse, hobbling around on him.
Yeah, and apparently Chael Sonnen had questioned the whole thing. I guess Sonnen really can't remember exactly what it was that he said, but he apologized to Varner for it. He almost thought that Varner was exaggerating it a little bit, but I don't know, that's not the way it looks.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully it'll be all right. It'll recover and recuperate all that and come back, but not his fault. He put together a hell of a fight. I think he should have got some kind of courage bonus award for that one anyway, regardless of whether it should have been stopped earlier or not. And James Krause ended up getting the win by injury, I guess you could, even though I call it a TKO. Takeya Mizugaki had a pretty nice win over Francisco Rivera, unanimous decision there. And we had Robbie Lawler basically dominated Jake Ellenberger, got him out of there in the third round of six mark with a knee and some punches. And definitely an impressive bump. Lawler, now they're matching him up with Matt Brown.
Yeah, that's going to be wild. The consensus is that Brown's hotter than a firecracker, but the level of competition he has had recently is a little suspect. So can Brown rise to the occasion, and what will Lawler's strategy be? And as far as Ellenberger, he seems like he's really going to have to go back to the drawing board again. I guess he had changed camps for this fight and was training with out in Glendale with Ronda Rousey's crew. So he's going to have
to... I'd like to see Bobby Lawler train with T.J. Dillashaw. See what happens there.
Yeah.
He used a little and misdirection like Dillashaw was doing. He's definitely got the punches and the elbows and the strikes all around, but sometimes I just think he has a little bit of trouble with defense and mixing it up the right way. He just turns into the bull instead of the bullfighter like Dillashaw was.
Well, yeah, that's what I think is going to be such a fan-friendly fight with Matt Brown.
Right.
This could be a barn burner, so we'll see.
And Dan Henderson did not cover any bets. Had a tough fight against Daniel Cormier, and Cormier won by technical submission, rear naked choke in the third round. Henderson actually he actually mentioned the chicken incident in his post-fight interview, and he said maybe I shouldn't have given Daniel all that chicken. He was too heavy on him, throwing him around, and he laughed in the video where they did the chicken thing. When he stepped on the scale at like 191 pounds before weighing, he goes,
"Yeah,
the chicken."
Yeah, maybe a little bad news. Bad news for Daniel. I understand he had some knee problems, and just heard yesterday that possibly surgery may be in the near future, which no one wants to see that. Because I would like to see him fight the winner of John Jones and Gus.
Yeah. Some knee injuries are a lot worse than others, so hopefully it's nothing too serious.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's an injury here. I just read this like an hour ago. Chael Sonnen is going to be actually replacing his opponent, Wanderlei Silva, with Vitor Belfort for UFC 175. No surprise here that it's kind of like the expectation. I think Chael said it himself a bunch of times. He'd be real surprised if Wanderlei does this fight and doesn't come up with an excuse to get out of it. It doesn't really say anything about why Wanderlei's stepping down.
Oh, no, it was a failed drug test.
Oh,
yeah, they
apparently...
Yeah, apparently the commission went to Wanderlei's gym because they had one of those, I guess they're going so intense on the drug testing now that it's pretty much anytime, anywhere. And they showed up at his gym, and the word I've been able to get is Wanderlei not only refused to take the test, but he actually took off running out the back door of the gym. And now, again, now one of my sources is Chael Sonnen, so let's take this for what it's worth. But the fight's definitely off, and it was, and I guess as far as the commission is concerned, if you, like in any sport, if you don't take the test, that's as bad as a positive test. That's
right.
It's the same consequence. So if this is really the case, and I've heard no public statement from Wanderlei one way or the other, but if this is the case, apparently his career is pretty much over. And I something sounds awful funny here that he would, I mean, he's never been intimidated, he's never backed away from anything. I can't imagine him behaving like this. I just don't get it.
Yeah, that's unbelievable if that's true. This report from Sherdog says Silva did not attend a hearing to receive a license from Nevada Athletic Commission, and Belfort has actually been cleared to compete by the Nevada Athletic Commission, which is a big surprise. I'm sure that this is either a trend with the Ultimate Fighter coaches not fighting, or maybe we'll see this rectified later on, and they'll do their duel, I guess. at some later point. But this is an interesting matchup.
But of all the idiotic things, assuming this is true, I mean, you can't even pick up a paper nowadays in any sport, not just boxing or MMA, but all this drug testing, growth hormone, steroids, on and on and on, of all times not to be doing this, of all times. I mean, could Vanderlei have picked a worse time if it's true? And if it's not true, take the test.
Exactly.
Well, I think your cat's agreeing with us, Rich.
Yeah, let him out. Get out there. The family dog, which is a half terrier, half poodle, has got the cats beat 2-0 and squirrels killed so far. So, cat should be outside more. Anyway, Belfort is interesting because. There's all kinds of questions whether he would be licensed in Nevada. Obviously, they've gotten that done pretty quick, which is surprising. But the whole issue with steroid tests is they weren't doing this type of stuff before. Going to your gym a couple weeks before, a couple months before. They weren't doing that enough surprise testing to get these folks that at least suspected of doing it in the past or were rumored to do it. There's something out there on the radar. But they could also be doing it with everybody, just in case. And that's the thing. Like, if they don't do that, they don't catch people. And they've been doing it that way for so long, not catching people, that people are stupid about it. They're just, right out in the open, or, right up until the fight where they have to tail it off so that they don't, bag on the post-fight test. And a lot of these people, like, Barry Bonds and baseball, they got whole teams working on this shit for them. Doctors and professionals, if they can afford it, they got a team that tells them what to take and when to take it. And sometimes that can be pretty sketchy, too. And Wanderlei is one of those people that he's been around a while, but he doesn't have huge command of the English language. So he's got a lot of people on his team just, to speak English with people and translate. I actually went to his gym one time out there in Vegas, and it was back when I did a little whole Zions thing, and he was sponsored by Zions. So he's not sponsored by Zions anymore.
Yeah.
He's an interesting character. He's been around for so long. I mean, he's one of those guys that used to be so dominant in MMA, and that's why it's kind of interesting to see Belfort take his place. He's another guy who's been around forever. I think he'll do good in this fight. It's a good opportunity for him, especially, proven he can fight without TRT in Nevada, where everybody thought he wouldn't even be able to get a license. That would be a good story of a guy cleaning up his act and being recognized. But then tomorrow we get the report that Victor Belfort is just positive for horse steroids. I doubt that will happen. Jose Aldo is actually in the news, too. I just saw this story yesterday. After Renan Brown got upset the other night and lost his title, he's the only, I think, Brazilian champion. But he says, certainly I feel underpaid. Talking numbers is difficult. A fighter dreams of reaching a level where he makes good money. Today I have other thoughts. I have been around the world. I have great insight into this. At the same time that they give business to us, they can improve pay. We bring millions to the organization's events. I'm a very marketable fighter, and everyone likes to see me fight. We see a lightweight being paid the same as a beginner. We see a heavyweight non-champion and non-title challenger earning a lot more than us. This situation makes us a little sad, but I have to keep fighting. Can't lose our focus. So, there's the guy making a lot of money. Saying a lot of inflammatory stuff. He actually made a total of $240,000 $240,000 with half of his pay coming via win bonus, beating Frankie Edgar at UFC 156. That was the only occasion his disclosed salary was released. He also says, we kill ourselves in training. We give the best of us to get out there and give a great show, break records for the UFC. We give the maximum, but do not have the recognition. Now, I do not know what to do. Do I need to get inside the cage and kill my opponent? I do not know. Wow, that's pretty bad. He says, I feel that it can be bad for me, Ferrao, Anderson Silva, that we are not fluent in English. What matters during a fight is how we fight, not language. I'm there to give people what they want to see. So, that's pretty crazy. To hear a guy like that say that, then I hope Dana White doesn't jump all over him like he did some of the other people that have complained that the fighter paying the tax. I doubt he will. I bet he'll try to put that fire out as fast as possible. Tony, here's a boxing story for you. What's going on with Floyd Mayweather? Fight in September.
That was pretty crazy. I only got part of the story, but, you know, what we sit on conference is called for Floyd. And I know a lot of what he does in his public persona, especially in with his all-access shows. He plays the villain. He tries to play the bad guy. You and I have been on calls with him, and a lot of it's an act. Like, and I said this a few months ago, in 2009, after Arturo Gatti, Alexis Arguello, and Vernon Forrest all passed away within a matter of weeks of each other, all sadly, and it was before the Mayweather-Marquez fight, we were on a conference call with him, and the first thing he said when he answered any questions was, I want to offer my sincere condolences to the friends and family of the UFC fighters. You know, Clay Ferguson is a great champion, and even, you know, really Terry Scotty, who he had defeated a couple of years prior. And he really came off as a sincere, genuine guy. But he gets a little bit too much of that bad boy, I guess, I don't want to say persona, that bad boy influence. And I was talking to a friend of mine recently, that's really... as the guy was getting older, he's older than we are, and he's really been just getting into a lot of trouble lately. He's really falling on the beaten path. And he's like, everything he's doing really on Facebook is like all this stuff like trades and Tupac and stuff like Tupac thug life and this and that. And I'm sitting there and I told him one day, and his son is starting to do it. And I told his son, I said, you know, he goes, yeah, Tupac, blah, blah, blah. I said, oh, yeah, where is he today? Well, he got shot and killed. Uh-huh. Exactly. Why you saving a lifestyle like that when you're gone before you hit 40? And that's one thing that, I mean, I think when Floyd gets into that type of nonsense, if he can do so much great for the sport, he has the chance to be, say, see what Sugar Ray Leonard was. And Sugar Ray had his fault. Any of us will come out and say that. He had his fault, and, you know, Sugar Ray, you know, he had drug problems, you know, for a long time. But Sugar Ray, you know, was such a public icon, and he kept a lot of his personal being in the city for a long time. And people can look up to him. I was a great fighter as Floyd is. And I know deep down, genuinely, as good of a person as he can be, I would not want a child of mine emulating him because of the goodness that he portrays. And now we got this whole thing with T.I. And a day after that happened, a website came out with a scoop. And I didn't know it was a scoop at first. And he killed and one injured. When Mayweather's tour bus or whatever gets shot up, and people thinking, why would Mayweather have a tour bus? But then as you read the article, you can tell it's a scoop, like, a person close to Mayweather says, I never saw Floyd duck so fast, I must have a 90-pound fight. I'm like, okay, now I can tell it's a joke. Which not a real funny joke, but I can tell it's a joke. And then they're like, oh, yeah, these sources, they must be good. They were guys hanging out on the street. I'm like, okay, it's a street barbecue. But at the same time, you can't be a guard because it's totally believable.
Well, why don't you tell us how you really feel?
John, would you like to elaborate, or would you like to chime in?
No, I totally agree.
Well, apparently, illustrate. T.I. is saying that he swung at and hit Floyd, and that's what sparked the brawl. Floyd came out right away and said that, you know, this whole thing is over a picture he took with T.I.'s wife, Tiny, at some boxing event. And, you know, he said that he's never had anything going on with Tiny, known her before T.I. So, as far as Tony's comments, I totally agree. Not quite the role model, either way, no matter who you believe.
No, and that's the thing. It's sad because he's really tricky, and he's going to look at his own aspects. And sometimes they will play like a bad boy, but then sometimes you see him like going like, I'm at Waffle House, and then pick up the sad play about it. And you tell a lot of it, either, I think genuinely, he's a good guy. I really do. I think, you know, it's a play to go and roll. Just give us a sell ticket. You know, don't give us a ticket. And you got to be, if you got to sell a ticket, you're not making money. And we're almost going to make some money.
Saturday's a big event for boxing. We got international fights from Macau, China, and Wembley Stadium in London, England on HBO. Big one is Frock versus Groves. That whole card. It's going to be pretty interesting. That's a rematch of a fight that Groves still thinks he won, I think. A lot of people still think he did, but Frock got away with it. And now he's convinced this is going to be the park. Now we've got some other interesting news. Saturday, June 7th, next weekend, we've got Big Cotto versus Sergio Martinez fight at Madison Square Garden. A lot of interesting undercard fights on that one, too. It's also pretty interesting. I eliminated on that undercard of Groves versus Frox there. Ghislaine Maduma, 16-0, is fighting Kevin Mitchell, who's 37-2. So that's going to be a pretty interesting fight. And that winner will become the mandatory challenger for the IBF lightweight champion, Miguel Vasquez. And we've got another UFC fight card, two of them actually, to be exact, back-to-back. I don't know what the timing of these are going to be. I don't have the fights right in front of me as far as times, but I have the cards here. One of them's in Brazil and the other one's in Germany, so big time difference. Probably not going to be live the time. But they're both May 31st, Saturday. And there's a lot of talented folks on these cards. We've got main event of the Brazil card. I think this is the Ultimate Fighter finale. Ultimate Fighter Brazil 3 finale, they're calling it. Main event is Stipe Miocic, who's 11-1, fighting Fabio Maldonado, who's 21-6. We've got, obviously, the guys who made it here, the Ultimate Fighter guys in the co-main event. Antonio Carlos Jr., 3-0, versus Tor Miranda, who's 9-3. And undefeated guys in the other fight there, Warley Alves, who's 6-0, versus Marcio Alexander Jr., who's 12-0. In And then the local support, we've got Damian Maya, 18-6, fighting Alexander Yakovlev, who's 21-4-1. Roni Mariano Becerra is on the card, 14-4, fighting Robbie Peralta, who's 17-4. We've got Rodrigo Dam, 12-6, fighting Rashid Magomedov, who's 16-1. Ernest Chavez, undefeated at 7-0, fighting Elias Silverio, who's 10-0. Paulo Thiago's on the card, he's 15-6, fighting Gassan Balatov. Mark Edeva, 6-0, fighting Edemilson Souza, who's 14-3. Ricardo Abreu, undefeated at 4-0, fighting Wagner Silva, who's 3-0. And we've got Marcos Rogério de Lima, 11-2-1, fighting Richardson Moreira, who's 7-1. And the first fighter on the card is Matt Hobar, who's 8-1, versus Pedro Munhos, who's 10. And then you have the big fight in Germany. The main event is a cash. They're hoping it's going to be a cash cow here because it's against Mumu. It's a Mumu fight. Munhos versus Musasi. Mark Munhos, 13-4, very tough guy, and Gegard Mousasi from Strikeforce fame, also a very tough guy, been around the world back again, fought a lot of big names. He's 34-4-2, and that should be a very interesting fight there.
Well, yeah, I think Mousasi's going to have to really work his takedown defense better than he has in the past, because Munhos is going to probably go back to his bread and butter and see if Musashi can try to keep it standing.
And this is over in Europe at the O2 World in Berlin, Germany. So I think it's kind of going to be like a home fight for Musashi, even though I don't even know really where he's from, but I think he's from somewhere in Europe.
France.
Yes. So close enough. Oh, actually, yes. France is Germany's enemy. Used to be.
That's over with. Fortunately, that's over with.
Yeah, I think still Mustafa would be considered, on home turf for that fight. So very interesting. We've got Francis Carmont on the card in the co-main event. He's 22-8, fighting CB Dalloway, who's 14-5. And we've got guy interviewed for the Ultimate MMA Magazine. I interviewed this guy, Luke Barnett, Pete DeNoe, still undefeated, fighting Sean Strickland, who's 14-0. That'll be somebody who's got to go there. Inamaki, 21-5-1, will be fighting Nicholas Backstrom, who's 7-0. Mikhail Tenenbaum, fighting Gilbert, 14-5. Magnus Sinclair, 11-4, will be fighting Christoph Junko, 14-0. And a big record here, Yuri Alcantara, 29-5, fighting Vaughn Lee, who's 14-9-1. Pavel Pavlak, who's 10-0, will be fighting Peter Sabata, who's 13-4-1. Andy Ogle, 9-4, fighting Maximo Blanco, 9-6-1. And finally, this is a weird one to be the first fight on the card, but we've got Victor Pesta, 9-0, fighting Ruslan Magomedov, who's 11-1. First fight of the night on that card. Very weird.
You know, getting back to the Brazil card, I have to give Maldonado all the credit in the world for stepping up on short notice, not only time, but jumping up to the heavyweight division. So he's going to be pretty well outgunned. I would think Stipe wins this wherever the fight's at. But it's amazing that Maldonado just took that. I mean, he's going to be giving away probably at least 20 or 30 pounds. And it be interesting to see how that goes. Now, I would like to see Stipe work on his ground game a little more, maybe, and try to work some submissions. So we'll see how that goes.
All righty. Well, I mentioned it on a few shows back that Rich Franklin was going to be looking to be named the vice president of ONE Fighting Championship, and it's official now. He signed the contract, and he's He's actually over there, overseas right now, with one fighting championship. So it's actually taking on a life of its own over there. Actually, Ben Askren is coming up on his debut with that outfit over there. Rich did say, I think in the last article I mentioned on the show, that he got his blessing from the UFC, that they're not concerned about it. They're not really a big powerhouse over there, and they're really not trying to be. But, you know, an organization that could generate as much interest as, like, a Pride type of organization over there, overseas, especially in that part of the world where the UFC isn't a powerhouse, that could get strong really fast. So you bring a guy like Richard Franklin in, who knows a lot of talent and knows the business, and the sky is the limit as vice president. So I'm looking forward to what he does. But they say they're aggressively hiring in all positions and looking to add another 200 staff in the near future as they grow. And at the moment, they're a young company. And Rich Franklin will do a lot of different things for them, from talent management to fighter recruitment and giving seminars. And he's not going to be moving to Singapore or Asia. He's going to be based in the United States. But he's going to work remotely from home and fly out to Asia for a week or a few months whenever he's needed. So that obviously sweetened the deal for us. So looking forward to that. I already said Robbie Lawler and Matt Brown are going to fight. That's going to be for UFC on Fox 12. Don't know the date offhand.
Yeah, there's just so many questions about that. That if Brown really can force the pace, we'll see how that goes if it gets into the later rounds, or is Lawler going to have too much in the early part? I do think the longer it goes, the better for Brown. But Lawler can hit very hard to the body, and Brown's shown some susceptibility there. So it's going to be a fascinating fight.
Yes, sir. Also in the news this week, the UFC is continuing their global expansion, and now they're actually they're doing background checks for different people. I think I talked about this on the show way, way back, but there was a guy named Benjamin Brinza who was discovered to be associated with a lot of neo-Nazi groups, perhaps the neo-Nazi himself. And they signed him to a UFC contract based on his MMA record, and then all kinds of stories came out and pictures of him associating with neo-Nazis. So in the wake of that, they've got comprehensive questionnaires now asking fighters to release personal information, including but not limited to criminal backgrounds and medical history, with the understanding that participants will waive doctor-patient confidentiality. So not only, looking for those associations with bad people, but they're looking for, what do they call it in Obamacare? Previous something condition?
Pre-existing or, pre-existing. Well, this is interesting because if they're going to start looking at criminal backgrounds, I mean, take boxing, for example. I think boxing's helped a lot. Bernard Hopkins is the first guy that comes to mind, how boxing really helped him. But I'm sure if the three of us put our heads together, we can think of a lot of guys that have really been saved from a life of crime through the discipline that boxing's taught them. And I don't know where this is going to lead to, honestly, because this sounds like something that the UFC is doing as an organization, not the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see how it goes. But if someone has a misdemeanor conviction from 15 years ago and Dana White doesn't like that, well, okay, sorry. I'm just a guy that believes in second chances. I don't know. Maybe it's me, but not the kind of society we seem to be turning into now.
Yeah, well, actually, there was a recent thing with boxing with Carlos Molina. I know it was Molina. I don't know if it's Carlos. There's so many Molinas out there boxing. But, I think it was Carlos Molina was actually arrested and prevented from fighting a couple times for what should have been a misdemeanor. It was like a borderline sex assault case. You know, it's like, it sounded like the cops basically persuaded the girl to have a complaint, but she didn't have a problem with it as it happened. And it was when he was young and she was young, and, you know, he's been running around the country fighting without, you know, causing alarm because he was wasn't flying on planes, he was driving for most of his fight. And then they finally busted him in Vegas.
Oh, okay, now I assume he had been indicted for that, so that was ongoing? Because I remember reading about it, I don't remember the details. So he was considered a fugitive, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So that would be one thing. Okay, if there's a warrant for your arrest, that's a whole different situation than going back years and years and years. I just see that as a difference. I mean, and if we're going to go back and try to disqualify someone for
Jeremy Stevens, the UFC had to bail out one weekend and ended up canceling the co-main event of one of the fights on the card. Jeremy was supposed to be in, if I remember correctly. I think it was Stevens. Yeah, they don't call him Little Heathen for nothing.
Well, again, though, wasn't that an ongoing thing? You see the difference here. I mean, if it just happened and it hasn't been adjudicated by the courts and all that other stuff, that's one thing. I understand that. But if they're going to go back, this whole criminal background check, and they're going to go back, God only knows how far they could go back. Yeah, and if it's just something from 10, 15 years ago, and that's, well, sorry, you're out. We just want choir boys. Well, I don't know.
Well, speaking of choir boys, that was Freddie Roach's nickname as a boxer.
Well, and not that there's anything wrong with choir boys, okay? I don't mean it like that, but you get my point. Nobody's perfect.
Believe it or not, if you look up Freddie Roach's boxing record, I think that's what they called him because he was literally a choir boy. But anyway, Joe Rogan, he's another choir boy. He is supposedly going to fight in the UFC. I don't know if this is a spoof article. It wasn't on Cage Potato, so I don't think this is a joke. But sounds like some unnamed fighter challenged him. Called him a bitch and said he wouldn't step into the ring. And so I convinced Dana White to let me fight, and now I'm going to show this guy who the bitch is. And if anybody doesn't know, do a Google search or YouTube search on Joe Rogan Jiu-Jitsu, and you'll probably find him, you know, other people challenging him in the gym losing out, because he knows shit. He doesn't just start around that, you know, this move and that move, because he's seen it before. He's actually done most of these moves. And he hangs out with a lot of different trainers and trains a lot. And apparently some kind of belt and some kind of martial arts dating back to when he was a teenager. So that's what kind of got him involved.
Yeah, I understand he has a taekwondo background. I don't know if he has any boxing experience or Muay Thai, but I assume if he's going to get in the cage, I assume he's at least training. So that would be interesting.
Dana White said there is a reason we have Joe on our team here in the UFC. He isn't just a personality. He is a great fighter with knowledge about the sport. And he also said, I feel bad for the dude that called him out because I promise Joe will knock the living shit out of him. Tell Joe in his other show, Fear Factor, rather than going into the octagon with him. You know, myself would rather eat a testicle than take a kick to the face from Rogan. And it doesn't say when this fight would happen, or even who the opponent would be. But I guess he said he's going to make an official comment within the next week. So we'll see if that's real or not. I already talked about the Pat Burger fight. Vitaly Klitschko, back in the news, just won the big mayoral race over in Kiev, Ukraine. So chances of him coming back to boxing are probably pretty slim at this point. He ended up giving, the city ended up giving him 57% of the vote. I didn't know this. Yeah. Oh, this article says he never suffered a knockdown in his heavyweight career. I did not know that.
His only losses, he had the loss to Clifford early in his career when he,
Interesting. Learned so much about a fighter after he's done fighting.
The only time I ever saw him get slightly wobbled was when he fought Corey Sanders, who was coming off the big knockout of Vladimir Klitschko. And he caught early in the first round with a fast left hand, and he caught it a little bit, and he buckled, and then next thing you know, he came back to put Sanders to the woodshed.
Well, it sounds from its situation over there in Kiev that Klitschko is going to be in politics for a long time. He actually associated himself pretty closely with the guy who ended up running in the landscape of the presidency, a guy named Petro Poroshenko. And this guy's a billionaire chocolate maker. So I guess instead of let him eat cake, he's going to say let him eat chocolate. Klitschko is pretty close with the guy. So after he leaves the presidency, Klitschko serves a few years as mayor. It's not out of the question that they'll elect him president of Ukraine. What's left of it after Russia's done. Billionaire chocolate maker. I don't think I've ever heard that phrase before. There must be some good chocolate. So it looks like he's gone out of the heavyweight picture. Maybe we'll get that belt of his has already changed hands. Maybe we'll get an American champion one of these days. If all goes well. The big news we didn't get to last week, I think the story I sent you guys both right after it broke, is Bob Arum is now saying that Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather will happen. And Bob Arum, of course, Manny Pacquiao's promoter. And Floyd Mayweather has said, as long as Bob Arum is promoting Manny, I don't want any part of the fight. That's, I think, one of his latest comments there, but Bob is now kind of changing the drawing board, going back to square one, and he is thinking what I was thinking when we talked about this, maybe not the last time, but whenever we discussed this, I think I brought it up at least two or three times, that I think if any possibility of a fight remains, it would be Floyd's very last fight. And that's what Aaron thinks is going to happen. He says, he's prepared to sit down with the Mayweather team at any time and work out terms, but his expectation is that Floyd will let his contract run out with Showtime, so he'll have a 49-0 record if all goes well, and then he'll sign this fight with Manny without any constraints of any contract, free-range negotiations, and, make it the big fight that it's supposed to be, and it'll also be smart on Floyd's part because obviously Pacquiao's going to keep fighting him until then. And, probably going to have some tough fights and get a little weathered. And obviously Mayweather's not turning any big fights down either after, his last fight with Maidana. But I think he's still a little fresher than Pacquiao is. And obviously he hasn't been knocked out like Pacquiao has. So I think he's really waiting in the wings for Manny to slow down a few steps, and for that to be, if he's going to lose, that's his last fight, and he did it, can't be criticized for not signing it and doing that fight at the end of his career, because I really does deep down think that important, even though he's not going to run up there and tell everybody, but at the same time, he has to think he's smart.
I'll believe it when it happens.
I think the whole thing has a lot to do with Bob Arum getting friendly with Oscar De La Hoya, too. Because even though Oscar De La Hoya said I don't speak for Floyd, he obviously speaks to Floyd. So this might be coming from that relationship they've kind of rekindled. So it's an interesting, you know, theory, but it is from one side of the spectrum. So until we have Floyd kind of respond to it, I don't know what to make of that. But it would prove me psychic. I'd be interested in that, even if it is kind of too late, too little too late, if it ends up being a dud, you know, for whatever reason. I think that fight has to be made, and if it's going to be made at any time, why not, you know, the attempt for 50? That would be such a huge thing. 50 hours, I mean, it's obviously been done and surpassed by other fighters, but it would be a big for this day and age for an American welterweight to do something like that. It would be a huge thing for a guy like Manny Pacquiao, a hero of his homeland, to make that not happen for Floyd.
What really could help Trump's interest back up is what good food. You know, the luster got knocked off when Jessica Pacquiao had lost to Bradley, even though everybody felt that he won. It wasn't like it was an eye opening to him. Even if he was in the rematch the other month, I wrote on there that if the 12 rounds were over, it was like everybody was expecting Manny to get a clean rate, fight that people were going to instantly forget. Kind of like the fight with Joshua Crotty. Because it was like, okay, he was there, he won, he dominated, but it wasn't anything impressive. So he lost. And then it was, oh my God, everybody, oh, how terrible it was. As long as people made talking about that fight, that's the only reason it was a rematch. And then Pacquiao gets, you know, knocked out by Marquez, out cold. Only way that I think some of the luster can really be restored to this is if there is a Pacquiao-Marquez fight. Marquez had the good win a couple weeks ago, beat Mike Alvarado pretty handily. Pacquiao beat Bradley. They're now on a collision course for a fifth time. Now, if you go back and you watch the series of four fights between Pacquiao and Marquez, the first one 10 years ago. Only 10 years ago, can you imagine it? Pacquiao dominated the first round, had Marquez down three times. But then when the fight settled more into a boxing match, it was Marquez that started really handling most of the action. Some people thought Pacquiao won, some people thought Marquez won, it was a draw. And a decision I can agree with. The second fight, which I scored, Pacquiao had the big knockdown in the third round, had Marquez hurt. It was a very close fight, but decision, I thought Pacquiao won by 3 points. Clearly. The third fight, I really didn't get to see the whole thing in one viewing. I saw bits and pieces. Everybody thought Marquez won. Pacquiao gets the decision again, real close. That was the most controversial in my eyes of the series. Go back to the fourth fight. If Pacquiao got knocked down early by a wide, looping, ugly punch that he should have never got caught by, but then he came back, knocked Marquez down, and then he was actually dominating up at the time of the stoppage. Now, I didn't get to order the fight because I was working that day, and I didn't get home in time. Just I was following it online. And I remember the person that was typing in, you know, the action was, okay, Pacquiao's got him hurt. He's sensing blood. He's going for the kill. I don't think Marquez can last the round. Oh, my God, Pacquiao's down. The fight's over. What the hell just happened? Pacquiao, I think, needs that sixth fight with Marquez, and he needs to finish what he started in the sixth round of that fourth fight. He needs to have him hurt. He needs a sense of blood, and he's got to finish the show, not get finished himself. If he does that, then I think a lot of that luster that got rubbed off gets put back on.
Well, who knows? I mean, it's not something both sides have talked about yet that we know of. So I'm sure as Floyd gets closer to that 49-0 record that he's trying to get, like because of those two. All depends. But anyway, we've got Mark Johnson coming on in about 10 minutes here.
One thing I'm going to make a mention of it now, but I wanted to do the full announcement while Glenn's on the air. That was the loss just a few days ago of one of the greatest action light heavyweights in history, gentleman that I had the privilege of meeting back about 16 years ago, Matthew Saad Muhammad. But I would like to talk more about it in depth with Glenn on the air, because I want to also have the perspective of somebody that also carried the same title there.
Yeah.
He was one of the finest and most fan-friendly fighters of this generation.
Yeah, there's no question. I remember one of the most exciting moments was that eighth round in that Yaki Lopez fight. I'll never forget that. I was in the bar section of a restaurant, and it had the whole place on fire. I mean, Lopez just was not stopping. It was an amazing fight. I mean, Matthew Saad Muhammad could come back as well as anyone I've seen. As well as anyone I've seen. That was July 1980 of that one. Yeah, that was just...
My dad.
Yeah, he was...
A funny story with Green Years, and I think I got a kick out of it. But I think he said that each round, Lopez landed about 70 punches, unanswered. And there's no way in today's boxing that any referee that that fight go on that long. And
yeah.
One of the clear perspectives that I had years later, I mean, not just from meeting Matthew years later, but one of my trainers in Philadelphia was also one of his cornermen. And he always told the story, Red Thompson, I told him 2 weeks ago, and Tom, I'm actually, regretting that Red wasn't coaching anybody on the card that we went to last year, because you would have loved meeting him. The guy told great stories. And the one thing he even told you about that fight with Yaki Lopez, after the first round, Matt came to the corner and he sat down on the stool, and his eyes were out of it. I mean, he was completely out of it. And in that 6 seconds, it looked like almost like he woke up. He said, when he sat down, I mean, his eyes were rolling, he was leaning back, he was done. And they said, the buzzer went off, the second down, he said, oh shit, you know, he's in a lot of trouble. And he just said, he just rolled it, and his eyes just woke up. And he was in the most unbelievable appreciation he saw in a matter of 60 seconds that he's ever witnessed. And that's how you got the name of the back here.
Yeah, and I remember when Dwight Braxton fought him the first time, and I kept waiting for him to come back, and I think sometimes with the style that he had, there's only so much of that you can take. And the cash register just rang up early that night for him. But what a career. I mean, just when he was fighting, it was must-watch television, because back then boxing was on the networks pretty much every weekend, Saturday and Sunday, during the afternoon. And his fights were just so exciting. I mean, don't you dare miss him. And he was only 59 when he passed away.
We're back.
All right. Yes, sir.
Well, I kept you on hold. That's the first. But I've had to reconnect you. That was a Skype issue. Skype just crashed on me. So we should be all set.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, guys, we're talking about Matthew Saad Muhammad. Talk about a story as you look back at this guy's life. Incredible ups and downs. actually became an advocate for the homeless after staying sheltered himself. He was 59 years old when he died, and considered by a lot of people to be one of the most exciting boxers of all time. He lived in Jenkintown, born in 1954 in Philadelphia, and lived with an aunt, but was abandoned on the street at age 5 when the family couldn't take care of him. Apparently, took him out into the city where he wouldn't know where he was or how to find his way home, and ran away from me. I was alone on the streets. I was so scared. A policewoman found me and asked me my name. I told her I didn't know my name. I was taken in by Catholic nuns and named him Matthew from the Bible in Franklin because he was found on Philadelphia's downtown Benjamin Franklin Parkway. Then he found his calling in a boxing gym in South Philadelphia and started his pro career in 1974, just 3 years before he won the NABF title. And then shortly after becoming champion, he converted to Islam and changed his name to Matthew Saad Muhammad. And years ago, he became homeless and took refuge in a Philadelphia shelter, but rebounded and had a home when he died. He also became an advocate for the homeless. So, tremendous heart as a fighter,
When I met him back in 1998, this was only a couple years after his last professional fight, Anthony had the blessing to fight Muhammad Ali. And my dad even said, like, he saw Matthew training us one day. I think they were at, like, it wasn't a gym, but I don't know if you go like an open workout in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. And my dad was like, you know, he looks really good. He looks really good. And the one guy my dad worked with at the time was a former pro fighter, and his father was a ranked welterweight. And he said, he's off. His timing was off, and the guy could tell right there that Matthew's got crazy behind him, and Braxton really brutalized him, what Muhammad Ali really brutalized him in the rematch. And then Matthew was taking fights, I think it was 1992. I met him in 98 and got to marry him at the Rec Center. Because, as I said, Red Thompson was one of his old trainers. He was training guy there. And Matthew was also friends with my trainer, Kevin. And like one day, Matthew started outside. He was like, talking to me, wanted to work out. I was sparring. And he said, oh, man, you got a lot of heart. He goes, remember, I've been fighting for 4 years by this time. He goes, remember, you're short. Which I knew. And I think that was one of the first things I learned the day I started boxing, that I was going to be shorter than most of my opponents. You got to stick the jab, and throw right hand. It's me a 1-1-2, which one of the first things I teach you to do. And he goes, normally, I can look at that. I can charge you $1,000 to come and fight the only champ in the world. But you're a heavy boy, so I'll give it to you for free. And I'm feeling like, well, thank God, because right at that time, I was a senior in college, and I barely had 2 nickels. And then I was like, you know what, $1,000 is telling me that I'm short and I got to throw up on the rear hand. But that was the last time I saw him. Again, I had gone back to school a few weeks later, and by the time that I had hurt my hand, that I was out for a year and a half. By the time I came back, I'm not sure if he was homeless by that time, but he wasn't at the gym any longer.
Well, he'll be remembered for a long time as a great, great fighter, a great all-around human being, I guess. And speaking of that, we've got to get one of those on the phone, Glenn Johnson. You guys had a step to the front here for a lot of this stuff. Hit the wheel here with the second little camera.
Hello.
Hello, Glenn.
Hello.
Hello, Glenn. Can you hear me?
Who's this?
This is Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Say that again?
It's Rich from Fight News Unlimited.
Oh, hey, Rich. How are you, man?
Good. You got the radio show interview?
Okay. When you want to do it now?
Yeah, that's what we were scheduled for. I don't know.
Okay. All right, let's do it.
So what do you got going on these days?
I'm just doing some personal training and stuff like that. Just taking it easy.
Now, have you been watching a lot of fights?
Yeah, working on a couple of fights. I'm supposed to be fighting on the 28th of next month in Zaire in Africa.
Oh, awesome.
Glenn, is this going to be the Rumble in the Jungle Part 2 in Zaire? Are you fighting in Zaire? Is this going to be the Rumble in the Jungle Part 2?
Yeah, actually it's supposed to be the anniversary of that fight with Ali and Josh Foreman, anniversary coming up. I forgot what number that is, but we're supposed to be taking part in that show, so I'm excited
40
to
years.
Be a part of that event.
Yeah, that'll be
yeah,
40
exactly.
Years. Wow.
Yeah, I was 5 years old when that happened.
And, Glenn, one thing we were discussing shortly before we got you on the air, and I purposely said I wanted to talk more about it with you on the air because, you know, it was a title that you carried, and you carried it proudly. We just recently lost one of the I'm a Philadelphia guy. We just recently lost one of our icons, Philadelphia, former light heavyweight champion of the world. And a guy that you always reminded me of a modern day version of Matthew Saad Muhammad, and you know, I just wanted to get your feedback on you know, what you thought of him as a fighter and what it was like to carry a title that he carried.
You know, he's an excellent fighter. I mean, I know all about being, you know, the hardcore fighter. You know, that guy that has to earn their keep, and you know, he was one of those guys, one of the throwback from back in the day, and you don't have much of those guys around now. So, I mean, it's an honor to be mentioned in his name, a part of that mantra. So, you know, I'm very excited that my name feel that way. And I mean, you know, it's a big loss for boxing. And you know, all the best to his family, and you know, my condolences to them, you know, family and friends. And you know, we'll see. You know, I'm gonna try to go out there. I'm not sure if I'm gonna go because I'm getting ready for this fight. But if there is any chance I can go out there, I would.
Oh, absolutely. Glenn, another thing I was gonna bring up. You know, you were, you know, a world champ, and the year that you were a world champ, you were great. Top contender, and still a viable name in the sport, you know, a highly respected name in the sport. Last week, there was a big fight on Showtime. I unfortunately didn't get a chance to watch it. I was away last weekend between the current light heavyweight champion, Adonis Stevenson, and a unheralded challenger that really came and put on a good show in Paul Fonfara. And I don't know if you had a chance to see that show, and if you did, were you itching to get in there and maybe scrap with Stevenson?
Yeah, I saw the fight. Fonfara did a good show. You know, he was a tough guy, and he you know, he make a good show of himself. There's nothing to be ashamed of with his stands. And it was an exciting fight. You have three knockdowns in 12 rounds. One guy got knocked down twice, and he come back and knock the Stevenson down. So it was an exciting fight. And I would love to get a chance to fight Stevenson. I mean, you know, he's a strong guy. He's a tough guy. I respect his talents. But, you know, I give myself a good chance against anybody.
Oh, absolutely. Well, my dad brought up a very good point. You're one of my dad's favorite fighters. So one of the things that I mentioned to him when I was mentioning some other fighters and how he felt they would fare in that fight. And he said the one name he mentioned was, you know, one of your old rivals, Bernard Hopkins. And he said that Stevenson, he thought he got exposed a little bit. You know, good fighter, southpaw, big puncher, but he felt that he was a little bit, you know, he was easy to be timed. and he'd be susceptible to counter punches. And my dad said, he goes, one thing is, he goes, I think Bernard would draw him into traps and hit him with lead right hands. Then I asked, you know, about you. And he thought that you could out-tough Adonis Stevenson, because Stevenson's got a big punch, but he was knocking, you know, a lot of guys out. And how would he fit if there with a guy like yourself that has a tremendous chin, tremendous resiliency, and also equal strength and power to stand up to him?
I do believe, you know, that's, your father have good eyes. I see the same thing as well. I saw it before I even started fight. I knew that was the way to get to him. And I mean, something I would love to happen. And I mean, the one thing that I worry about with Bernard is just the fact that you know, he's very tricky. Bernard is a smart fighter and all that. I don't know if he's physical enough to deal with the Stevenson. He doesn't punch hard enough, I don't think, to hurt Stevenson. And in a long jump fight and a physical fight, I don't know how he would fare against that kind of physical fight, just because, not because you don't have the savvy, but just because I don't see him as a physical being to put up with that kind of, you know, deep punching. And he would avoid a lot of it, but he also will get hit with a few of them. And those are the ones that I'm a little worried about.
Very good point. And well, the one thing I said, I didn't get a chance to see the fight. I know for years, and obviously as he is closing in on 50 years old now, Bernard's one specialty was fighting exceptional against guys that would like to have come straight in. Your guys like your Felix Trinidad, your guys like your Kelly Pavlicks. And that's what my dad said. He goes, he's picked apart southpaws before. My dad just kept saying, I deceived the straight right hand landing. I deceived the straight right hand landing. And then when I asked him, you know, what he thought with your fight, if you had fought Stevenson, and he was saying more, like he liked the overhand right and left hooks to the body. And just
well,
being able
well,
to...
You know, go ahead, finish. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Tom.
Oh,
go ahead.
No, I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. And he was saying overhand right, left hook to the body, and being able to neutralize him up close and force him backwards.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm physical enough. I think I match up better with Stevenson than Bernard match up with Stevenson, because all of those names that you call who are straight-ahead fighter, and it's true, he do deal well with guys that come straight ahead, but none of those guys that you just mentioned is as physical as Stevenson. They don't punch as hard as Stevenson, and that's the part that I'm going to give him the most trouble, just because Stevenson is so physical. He's such a strong, hard punching guy, you know. And I think for the earlier on in his career, when he was able to avoid those punches with his legs, I don't think that's something he was able to do now to avoid those punches with his legs. You have to set traps, be a little more coy, and be smarter, but all along staying close in close space with Stevenson, where you have to block and have to be physical with Stevenson and all of those things to last the whole 12 rounds and then pick him apart. But, you know, I just don't see how he was able to do it with such a physical guy based on all that I've seen from him.
Now, Glenn, big fight this weekend, George Groves versus Carl Froch, and you fought both of them. And this is obviously a rematch of a fight that nobody expected to be a big fight, but what do you think is going to happen in that one?
I think Carl Froch should win that fight. You know, Carl Froch is a smarter fighter.
is more physical. Again, there's another fight that I think the most physical guy will win. Grove is a faster guy. He moves his hands more. He will throw more punches. What I think called flash. We still feel like his punch is better and hitting with the more damaging punch. And so I give him the edge there. I heard that the first fight, Grove was ahead in the fight before the fight was stopped. And even the stoppage was controversial. So it should be a good fight as well. You know, neither guy played defense well. So it's going to be a lot of punches and it should be entertaining.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that because the last few weeks I've been hammering on defense, more so in mixed martial arts than boxing, but it happens in boxing a lot too, and you kind of shake your head sometimes when guys just go in there and they don't show a lick of defense. And, you know, that should be your game.
That always translates into short careers.
Exactly. People don't make the connection either. That's sort of the sad part, you know. You know, they think they can just go out there and just swarm people with the offense and not even have to worry about keeping their hands up. But then, you know, that's how it sneaks up on you because you get so cocky that you end up in a situation against a guy who's overmatched with you and you don't know it, and you could end your career because you're not just keeping your hand.
Exactly. And again, I mean, when you come up against tough competition too, a lot of the time, you know, defense is not a big deal because you're not really competing against guys who are threatening you. So, you know, you overlook the defense. So you're coming up against guys with good enough skills for you to respect them. You learn defense quickly. You know, that was my time. You know, coming up in boxing, I was assumed there quickly against experienced fighters. So even in the gym, so I had to learn to protect myself even before I learned how to throw punches, at least learn how to get away from punches.
Right. Well, we haven't heard from our other co-host, Psychic Tom, yet. Is there anything there, Tom?
I'm just enjoying everything. Glenn, it's such a pleasure to have you back on the show. Just love every minute. Just an honor to talk to you, sir. And my question. Okay. And my question to you is, you know, I know that you're still active at an age when a lot of boxers have long ago given things up. And I noticed from one of your fights from about 3 years ago, and I was Googling it, and you were interviewed and said that you had went out and ran 5 miles at a 7-minute pace, which is very good. And there were some people questioning why you were still, you know, training that hard. Well, my question to you is, on your training, Glenn, have you evolved your training, or are you still doing pretty much the same thing that is got you to where you're at?
I'm doing a lot of the same things, but I have made some adjustments. One, I'm older, and two, I haven't been winning lately the way I would like against the competition that I would like to win against. So I had to make changes based on those realities. And two, I know that I had to make some adjustments just based on age. How I needed to operate, be smarter about how I'm operating in the ring. So I make those adjustments, and I think I'm where now, where I should be successful, you know, with the age that I'm working with and the style now that I'm fighting with. I think I have a proper balance of how to be successful on the top level.
Yeah, I would assume that the key word there that you said is smarter, because I think with the experience you get to know your body a little more, and there's that muscle memory that you don't, your body, first off, you just can't train the way you were when you were in your 20s or even early 30s, but with the muscle memory that you have, maybe you can still get in decent shape without putting out that kind of effort.
Oh, definitely. And then you also have to know, you know, experiences, if you use it the right way, it can work wonders for you. And for me, I didn't use it sometimes. Sometimes I just went out there with the same attitude of, you know, blowing the guy out of the water. I mean, necessarily didn't work for me all the time. So as we give you the reality set in here, okay, you know what? You need to use some of the stuff that you have. You have tools that you're leaving in the shed. You need to pull it out and use them all. And then be successful that way. You can't just think you're going to do the same thing you always did and be successful. Because one, people are evolving and they're getting smarter. They see what you've been doing and they prepare for that. And they have a scheme against it. So, you know, you have to change things around a little bit.
Sure. And I could imagine early on in your career you figured out what you needed to do to make weight, because it seems like you've always been a professional and always, I can't remember too many problems you've ever had with that, but have you been paying a little more attention to nutrition or supplements or anything as you got older, or again, has your pattern pretty much been the same?
I never had a nutritionist early on in my career for the last, I would say, 6 years or so. I have a nutritionist. And so now, even in my younger time, I was eating table food. I really wasn't eating the stuff that I'm eating now. But now I'm on a proper regimen and, you know, the way our athletes were supposed to eat, the way that I was supposed to eat, even when I was younger, which I wasn't doing. So for the first time, I've been doing things the right way.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, a lot of times you hear that when you're younger, you can eat pretty much what you want and get away with it. But as you get older,
exactly.
As I've learned, you have to kind of pay a little more attention, but it can make a big difference. And, you know, let's face it, you need every edge you can get at any point in your career, but especially as you get older, when you're giving up a few other things, that nutrition can make a difference. And as far as supplements, you know, I know you got to walk a fine line there sometimes. Some of those supplements can be a little problem, maybe on testing, but do you many vitamins or anything like that?
I'm not a big supplement guy. You know, I have all-purpose supplement that I take that have all the vitamins in it, and that's pretty much it. I'm very particular what I put in my body because it makes me nervous to put stuff in my body that I don't really know about. So I try my best not to take any of those things.
Yep. Well, you go with what works and go from there. So hope you can keep things going.
Glenn's favorite supplement is hard work, right, Glenn?
Just the fact that I'm eating properly now, it really gives me the proper boost. That says, you know, all along I wasn't eating the way how I was supposed to, and that's really kind of set me back a little bit. So I'm excited about eating properly now, and it's giving me the energy I need to work with.
You're way through the ranks since we left. Straight wins against some pretty tough guys. Bobby Gutman, one of our former guests, was one of them. In fact, Tony's neck of the woods up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Just had a fight in February. He's a guy named Jamie Velasquez by TKO, and your first fight in that streak against Junior Ramos knocked him out in the second round. So. It was kind of funny when we talked to you, it was not too long after you said you might retire. So much for that, right?
I can hardly hear you. I miss a lot of what you said, but I know, I believe you said that I fought not so long ago, and that's true. I retired after I fought Farah, but then after I went home for a while and, you know, just doing some stuff and hanging around and training, doing some personal training and stuff. I mean, my energy started coming back and start getting the itch and stuff. And, you know, I felt like this is something that I could do. I had some personal issues I was dealing with. So I got my head clear. And once I got my head clear and I felt that, I might have rushed my decision. So
went back at it and did a few things, and it's been successful for me so far. I think from 3-0, and I'm excited to see what else is out there. I've been trying to get this Bernard Hopkins fight, but I think he's more interested in Stevenson, so let him do his thing and see where else I can catch him.
Well, looking at this guy you've got as your next opponent here on BoxRec, I'd say he's tougher than the last guy Bernard Hopkins fought.
Well, I know. I mean, you know, the guy that they're talking about, I mean, that guy, I've been trying to fight that guy that Bernard fought. I've been trying to fight him forever, ever since he got that title. And he always find reasons not to fight me. So, I know he was for the taking anyway.
Right, yeah. I think that's a fight a lot of people would love to see today. And I think just because he might be a few years older, I think he gets a lot more credit for, you know, extending his career than a guy like he does, who's not only fought for so long, but he fought world-class competition. I mean, just in the Super 6 tournament alone. That's scheduled for you. Just amazing to do that at your age and to compete so well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they gave me the opportunity, and I put in the work and, you know, came down to 68, and, you know, and give it a shot, and, you know, I did grow, you know, it eventually creep up on me because, you know, losing that weight at my age eventually caught up with me, and even when I went and fought against in England, it really proved how much the weight took out of me. So I know not to do that again and just kind of fight in the cruiserweight and light heavyweight division.
Yeah, that's definitely smart. A lot of people don't realize how important weight is in certain situations. We just talked about it with a UFC fighter who came in under the 205 weight and then ended up, the guy was too heavy. Couldn't do anything. You can be going too high sometimes.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, certainly I could meet the weight, but just have the energy to compete at the weight will be the issue. I mean, I know how to eat. I put in hard work, so losing the weight won't be a problem, but then have the energy to perform the way how I want to perform, that's what going to elude me.
Now, this next fight says it's for the WBC International Cruiserweight title, so that must be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a good fight. This guy's a good fighter. He's been making a lot of noise over there, and, you know, this guy going to tell me where I am. And all the stuff that I've been working on, he's going to really let me know if I am as good as I believe I am. So I'm looking forward to the fight. It's, you know, I love competition, and, you know, I go anywhere and fight anybody, because if you're going to be in the game, you got to at least believe that you can beat your competition. If you don't have that, then it's time to move on.
Right. I just noticed this. You can actually click on title name, and it shows you the history of it. BoxRec here, and looks like some pretty big names have had that title. Silvio Branco, Herbie Hyde, Giacobbe Frattolini, said a bunch of times, and title.
Yeah, it's quite a few people. I've been watching him and studying him, so yeah, I'm excited about seeing what we can do against him.
And what's your ultimate goal with boxing? I probably kept you in the first interview, but it's hard to hear that again.
I mean, really, I want to get another shot at Bernard. I mean, you know, if he's still in the game, I really want to give that a shot. I mean, he's the first man to beat me. I really believe I closed the gap from when I fought him until now, and I really like to test our skills in the ring again and see who improve who faded and revenge, take revenge for my first loss. And you know, I would really love the opportunity to do that.
How amazing would that be if Premier got a shot, unified the light heavyweight titles, and to match up for the unified, undisputed light heavyweight championship nearly 20 years after your first bout? I think that'd be pretty amazing.
Well, you know, thank you. I mean, I think I fought pretty much all the best fighter of my era that was around from middleweight, super middleweight, to light heavyweight, and you know, I felt like I compete against, you know, all of the guys that's in my age group and even some of the new crop that came up. So I feel good about my career and feel good about what I can do. So, you know, if I get a second shot at Bernard Hopkins, that would kind of put the highlight on my career.
Well, I asked you this question about a year ago in the interview again. I would like to ask you again. You know, as your career is winding down, as you're looking possibly at another chance at legendary career with Bernard Hopkins, as you stated, you went out there and you fought the best of the era, middleweight, speedweight, heavyweight, and every fight, you know, win or lose, was always a good fight. It was always competitive. You always gave an excellent challenge. And especially now, over the last few years, when fans really started to appreciate you, your name has come up as somebody that, after your retirement, is a legend Hall of Fame candidate. And, you know, what does that mean to you? And did you ever think early in your career, when maybe some of the breaks weren't going your way, if that was something that was still possible?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very happy my career and all that the accolades that, you know, people involve my name in. I'm happy about that. I'm excited. I'm proud of it. You know, when I first started boxing, I never really thought I would be on this run. And you know, it just turns out that way. And I'm so grateful that I have the career that I have and got a chance to fight against the people I fought against. And, you know, I really thought I did a good job, and hopefully people are thankful to see the performance I put on in the ring. And, you know, I'm just very glad that I was able to give some great performance for people to enjoy and fought against some of the best fighters that were around in my time.
And, you know, one thing I noticed about looking at your record, you're a real world traveler. I mean, you've been just about everywhere to fight. Can you tell us a couple stories maybe about some interesting places you fought?
One of the painful travels for me was in Italy when I went over there to fight against Silvio. I forgot his name now, but I fought him in Italy. I believe I won every round of, I think I lost one round out of a 12-round fight. And, you know, that was my biggest robbery of my career, where they took that fight from me and gave it to him on a unanimous decision. And, you know, that was very painful. That was very interesting. Even the driver that we had working for the promoter, he broke out in tears in the ring when he heard the announcement when the decision came out. He broke out in tears. I see a grown man cry that, you know, I've never spent maybe less than a week. I believe I was there for 4 or 5 days. And you know, he shows so much emotion. That was strange to me. That was a little funny. Out of all the places I fought and all the people I've been around, I've never been around anybody, not even people in my own camp, never show that kind of emotion. So that's one of my most experience. That's one of my, I guess, weird, good experience that I'm involved in.
Well, I also noticed you fought in Aruba, in the Cayman Islands, but never in Jamaica. Is there no boxing in Jamaica or something? Your home country?
Yeah, I always said I wanted to fight in Jamaica. It never happened. We tried many times, even when I was the champ, to get a fight to happen in Jamaica. It just never turned out. It never happened. I think it's because of money and a little different thing. So one of the times when we were trying, they didn't have a promoter there and a commission to make a fight happen. And since then, they did a good job of putting some stuff back together. Now they're having some good fights there. But during my A-day, yeah, it didn't happen. So we're still working on it if it can happen somewhere in the future. Yeah,
that would be great for you. And it actually says here on BoxRec that you're only one of two cruiserweights in the whole country. So.
I know. It's a little funny, right? I fought in so many other countries, but never my own.
And another two guys from Florida, too, so it's kind of interesting. Richard Hall. You gotta look him. Fight him if you want to fight in Jamaica.
Yeah, Richard and I put on a great fight here in Hollywood at the Hard Rock. Where it was a physical fight. And he's another guy that's extremely strong, and you know he's one of those big light heavyweights. So he was able to take a lot and give a lot. And it was an exciting fight as well.
Yeah, he actually took a title from him, the vacant Intermission Boxing Association light heavyweight title on that fight.
Yeah, it was a very good fight. And every time you see me, he's asking for a rematch. And he told him he can get the rematch whenever he wants.
From Kingston. There you go. That would be great.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting down to the last of our time here on the show. Is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to, say hello to, or thank, or anything like that?
Well, I just want to give a shout-out to all the boxing fans throughout the world, man. I mean, boxing fans is who continue to put food on our table, so very appreciative of them and you guys for spreading the word. Just thanks for having me on, and thanks for the listeners to listen. I appreciate it. You guys take care.
You too. It's always good to have you on. You're always full of great stories. I was worried, you know, how this would go since I already asked you all my standard questions, but I guess good to have you about that.
I only wondered the problem. I have a little hard time hearing everybody that was talking to me. I guess the connection is not as good as I would like it, but hopefully I answer all the questions properly, because some of it I just assumed that's what you guys were saying. I didn't hear all the questions the right way, but
yeah.
I actually came out all right.
We get that sometimes, because what happens usually is when it translates over to the recording, all that gets fixed. You can turn up the volume for any spot you can't hear, so it really turns up the volume.
Sounds good, guys. Take care of yourself.
You.
All right, Glenn. Good luck.
All right.
Hands up. Keep jabbing. Well, there you have it. That's another great interview with Glenn Johnson. He's so great. He's got two nicknames. They call him the Road Warrior and the Gentleman. Gentleman, yes, like Gentleman Jim. So I'm looking forward to this. Actually, just yesterday when I looked at his record, this fight didn't show up, so I don't know what happened or when it signed or whatever, but Glenn seemed to know about it and mentioned it right off the bat, this fight in Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of the Congo, and it's going to be for the vacant WBC International Cruiserweight title. This guy's fighting is Olunga Makabu, 6-1. 15 knockout wins to his credit and one knockout loss. One loss, I should say. And that's going to be on June 28th. Definitely. So we'll definitely be rooting for Glenn. And he's really living up to that road work nickname. Fighter on the road, if I've ever heard. Pretty interesting. And this guy's fought some pretty tough competition. guys are over one. Wheels, 22-1, knocked him out in the fifth round. Got the WBC Silver Cruiserweight title with that one, or retained it, I should say. And he won that title from a guy named Dmytro Kucher, who was 21-0 at the time, won a majority decision against that guy to get up. Really, the last slouch he fought was back in 2011. He fought a guy named Khalif Kiswa, who was 2-8-2. Knocked him out in the first round in South Africa. He only fought in South Africa and Monaco. So even this is kind of a trick for him. But, actually, we don't have enough time left because we have so many boxing matches to talk about this weekend. I didn't realize how many big boxing matches there were until I was looking through BoxRec while we were talking to Glenn. But all around the world, we have so much stuff going on this weekend. We got the two UFC cards on Saturday. There's also, over in the UK, Cage Warriors is putting on something called Super Saturday. Fights all day long. Two cards, just like the UFC, a marathon of MMA, they're calling it, over there in, I think, London. Unbelievable. But let's go to the boxing, since we've kind of alienated boxing a little bit, except for the Glenn interview, most of the show. We've got, first off, tomorrow night from Moscow, Russia, big event, Alexander Povetkin fighting for the WBC International Heavyweight title, which is vacant right now. He's fighting Manuel Char, who's 26-1 with 15 knockouts. Povetkin is 26-1 with 18 knockouts. So definitely evenly matched there. And speaking of the WBC Silver Cruiserweight title, which the guy that Glenn's going to be fighting just recently had, that belt's on the line between Rakim Chakiev, who's 18-1. With 14 knockouts, and Santander Salgado, who's 25-1 with 20 knockouts. It's also in Russia, Moscow, Russia. Nothing really else jumps out on that card. But then we got the Sheet Workers Hall down there in Philly, Tony. You got some fights going on. Derek Pettis fighting Lester Gonzalez. Well, it's nothing spectacular on here, but, you know, still some pretty decent guys. Yeah, let's see. What else we got? So that's page one. We got three pages of action here. We're going to go to page two now. And we'll go over to, I don't even know how to pronounce this place, but it's in Germany. Felix Sturm, 39-3-2 with 18 knockouts, fighting Sam Solomon, who's 43-11 with 18 knockouts in the main event of this one for the IBF middleweight title.
And those two has locked up a couple times in the past. Solomon's been there for the 84 years, and Sturm
And we've got a pretty interesting co-main event at light heavyweight. We've got Connie Conrad, who's 20-1 with 10 knockouts, I should say, fighting Nady Amar, who's 27-4-1 with 15 knockouts. And also the WBA female flyweight titles on the line. 10-rounder between Susie Kentikian, who's 32-2 with 16 knockouts, fighting Dan B. Kim, who's 9-2-1. So that's a pretty decent card. Some other fights on there, but we won't get to those. We've got too much other stuff to cover. And a guy I've been trying to get on as a guest, not too hard, obviously, is also fighting this weekend over in Macau. I think this one's going to be on HBO, yes. HBO 2, apparently. Featherweights, Nicholas Walters and Victor Chinian. This is for the WBA World Featherweight title. Vic's still fighting for world titles here. He's 39-6-1 with 28 knockouts, fighting Walters, who's 23-0, who also has 19 knockouts. So that should be a real barn burner there. And as if that's not a good enough fight to lead the card, we've got Nonito Donaire in action against a guy with a pretty similar record. A little bit fewer fights, but Donaire comes in at 32-2, 21 knockouts at featherweight, and Simpoway Vatieka is 26-2 with 16 knockouts. This one's for the WBA Super World Featherweight title, whatever the Super World is. Sam Steroid Solomon, is that what you're saying?
Yes,
beat him with a foreign substance. Now it's the clean fight. Let's see. I don't know. So we also have another title on the line in the Macau fight there. Evgeny Gradovich fighting for the IBF featherweight title against Alexander Miskerchian. Gradovich is 18-0 with 9 knockouts. Miskerchian is 24-2-1 with 9 knockouts. And page 3, before we run out of time, hopefully, we'll get to this last couple fights. Page 3 is still on Saturday right now. Oh, boy. Of course, we talked about a little bit, but we didn't go over the exact records. Carl Froch versus George Groves. Froch is 32-2. Groves is 19-1. Froch has 23 knockouts. Groves has 15. This is for the IBF Super Middleweight and WBA Super World Super Middleweight title. Also on the card, Kevin Mitchell, Islane Maduma. We talked about their records earlier, but Kevin's 37-2 with 27 knockouts. Gislin is 16-0 with 10 knockouts. Also, we got James DeGale, 18-1 record, 12 knockouts, fighting Brandon Gonzalez, who's 18-0-1 with 10 knockouts. And a pretty interesting fight here for the vacant WBA World Bantamweight title, Jamie McDonnell, who's 23-2-1 with 10 knockouts, fighting Timdangnarachawat. Probably butchered that one. He's 52-2. What a record, with 34 knockouts. So, could be an interesting one there. We even got a fight down in Iowa. It was pretty interesting. Cruiserweight fight between Jordan Schoen, 14-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting Jonathan Korn, who's 47-27 with 3 draws and 26 knockouts. Pretty interesting there. And then Hank Lundy. How could we forget Hank? Philadelphia guy. Hank Lundy's fighting at the Mohegan Sun this Saturday. He's the main event. 24-3-1 with 11 knockouts, fighting Gerardo Cuevas, who's 17-11. With 15 knockouts, and should be no trouble for Hank.
And all 11 of his losses have been by knockout. So we're talking about having Hank fighting here. He's only ever seen the final bell 2 times. The 2 times that he's won a decision. All of his 11 of his losses, he got knocked out, including a loss to Rich's favorite fighter, Ali Chiba. So this is the fight that, I mean, Hank's kind of stayed focused. Because, you know, we all know that he can be sometimes a vulnerable, especially with his beard. But at the same time, he's an exceptional athlete. He's got some focus. He's got to not waste time. He's got to not make any sloppy mistakes. He's just got to go there and take care of business, take out Cuevas, and keep busy for a big shot in either an elimination fight or a world title fight. Hank closest to tonight, he's at 134.5. He's in good shape, and he's ready to go.
Yeah, and he's really the best fight on the card, too. There really isn't anything else that jumps out on that card that I'd love to see. But we've got... The list goes on. Page 3 is the most packed, I think, here. We got our former guest fighting Saturday, too. Not too long ago, we had Alex Perez on. He's 17-1 with 9 knockouts. He's finally got an opponent, Jeremiah Wiggins, who's 10-2 with 1 draw and 5 knockout wins to his credit. That's going to be a 6-round welterweight fight down there in Whippany, New Jersey. And that's really the only big fight on that whole card. Then we go down to Washington, D.C. We've got a light welterweight fight between Ty Barnett, who's 24-3-1 with 14 knockouts, and Cosme Rivera, who's 36-18-3 with 24 knockouts. Might be an interesting one there. And then we go out to Vegas. Of course, going to have a fight in Vegas. This one's supposedly on HBO USA and HBO 2. Featherweight main event between Javier Fortuna, 24-0-1 with 18 knockouts, and Juan Antonio Rodriguez, who's 26-4 with 23 knockouts. And Super Bantamweight fight, also co-main event here, Luis Orlando Del Val, who's 18-1 with 13 knockouts, fighting Luis Rosa, who's 16-0 with 7 knockouts. And if that's not enough there, we got an 8-round middleweight fight between Sergio Mora, who's 25-3-2, and Samuel Rogers, who's 14-1. Mora's got 8 knockouts. Rogers has 8 knockouts as well. That's about it for good stuff on that card. But there's more. Oh, wait, is there? Well, now we're getting into Sunday. We got a WBA World Middleweight title on the line on Sunday. Over in another fight in Russia, Mitishi, Russia, Dmitry Chudinov, who's 12-0-2 with 8 knockouts, is fighting Patrick Nielsen, who's 22-0 with 11 knockouts. And as for interim WBA World Middleweight title, also a female fight on the card, Anna Laura Esteche, who's 10-3-1, fighting Svetlana Kulikova, who's 9-0 with 1 knockout. That's for the WBA female light welterweight title. Good stuff. And that's pretty much it. That's all we're going to cover anyway. Oh, here's the last fight on the list here. Guess where it is? Wednesday. The Chinese Benevolent Association Auditorium in Kingston, Jamaica. So there are fights in Jamaica. I guess we'll have to tell Glenn that. Between Donovan Campbell and Christopher Henry. Welterweights. Only fight on the card, though. So I guess that's why it's tough to do. In Jamaica. We had one fight and that's it. No support and cast. Anyway, that's all we've got, I think, unless you guys got anything to add. We're over time anyway.
I don't. Thank you guys again for a good show. Thanks to Glenn Johnson for being a great guest. We will be back in the next week, and until then, great weekend of fights. And I got to say, I hope you make a good check for that and watch it. Some good ones. Tornado signing out. I'm going to be the baby.
All right. And, Rich, I want you to catch the rest of last night's show and then email me when you do.
Definitely. I watched into the 20-minute mark. So
okay,
I
don't want to be a spoiler, and I got a big mouth. So I'm going to have an assignment for you. Okay, I'm going to have an assignment, okay? So please, watch that, email me, over and out, okay?
Sure, definitely.
All right, buddy.
And if you can't find a fight to watch this weekend, you have to be out of your mind or boo.
I think my old fiance that was so mad at me over that Matthew Saad Lopez affair, you know, and I didn't want to go to our table. The fight was so exciting at the bar. Needless to say, that relationship crashed and burned, but made me think of it. So, all right, guys, next week.
Adios. Thanks for stopping by, everybody. Until next week, thank everybody, especially our guest, Glenn Johnson. And I don't even know how we're going to have time to talk about all the fights that are going down this weekend when we talk about everything next week on the show, but we'll get it done, I'm sure, as we always do. Signing off.